answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
There is a lot of concern here that the Iranians might try to mark the beginning of the Jewish holiday of Passover with a huge missile barrage when that holiday begins at sunset tonight. Today, after the sun rose, the Iranian missile launchers were certainly very busy. At least five strikes aimed here at Tel Aviv itself. More than two dozen people injured, one of them an 11-year-old girl who we understand at this point is in critical condition. And as for the war itself, President Trump's comments getting a lot of attention that the war, or the U.S. role in it at least, could be over soon. Here's the president.
I think we're 2 or 3 weeks in.
Yeah. Means if it is,
we'll leave. Because there's no reason for us to do this. Now, it's possible that we'll make a deal before that, because we'll hit bridges, and we've hit some. We'll hit some bridges. We've got a couple of nice bridges in mind. But if they come to the table, that'll be good.
That'll be good.
And to encourage them to come to the table, the U.S. and Israel keeping up the barrage on military and regime targets in Tehran and throughout the country of Iran itself.
That is a report from Jonathan Haidt talking about Israel expecting a heavy barrage from Iran as they begin Passover, a most holy day. That starts today and concludes on April 9th, starting at sunset today. Now, we've got a lot of things in play today. First, President Trump is planning a major announcement tonight, right after our program. So as soon as we finish our program, Larry Connors USA, we will switch you direct to the president and his remarks regarding Iran. That's most certainly going to be on the schedule. And probably the Artemis mission might also be mentioned as well. But I want to point out to you, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu declared late yesterday, Iran, are you listening? Are you listening? Prime Minister Netanyahu declaring yesterday, Iran no longer poses an existential threat to Israel after a month of joint U.S.-Israeli operations. That is, again, from Prime Minister Netanyahu. They're right in the center, the ring of fire. And if he's saying they no longer see an existential threat from Iran, that means they could probably expect more missiles, drones, things of that nature. But the nuclear capability is gone, and the massive arsenal they had has been basically wiped out. So we will hear direct from President Trump following our program tonight. You want to make sure you stay with us. Welcome to hour number one, Larry Connors USA. Here we are, April 1. Yes, April Fool's Day for some, but as I said, it also begins a most holy day for the Jews, Passover, and moves us to Holy Week of Easter for Christians. With Larry Connors USA, I remind you, you're going to get news, analysis, opinion, and education. You will leave this hour with more information than you have right now. A little bit later in our second hour, a discussion in detail from Dr. Carol Lieberman about the Supreme Court ruling yesterday on what counselors, psychotic counselors can give to teens and talking to them about transsexual surgeries, things of that nature. And also, it appears the NBA bouncing one player out of Chicago because he proclaimed his religion and standing on behalf of Christianity. They don't want that. They say he's causing trouble in the clubhouse. They seem to accept thugs, criminal activity, sexual pervasiveness, and yet when he speaks up, he's thrown off the team. We'll get into that story as well. Later in this hour, John Daniel Davidson with The Federalist and what he expects from Trump tonight. He just published an issue yesterday saying the best thing for Trump to do now is simply fold up and walk away. But there are those who say that's too soon, too early. And our story behind the story, on this date, April 1, 1945, the U.S. began the assault on Okinawa, one of the many islands to get to Japan. Previously, we'd been going after Iwo Jima, and now the attention turning to Okinawa. On this date, 1945, we're going to combine those stories for you in our story behind the story later this hour. Now, back to what we're doing right now and what we have achieved in the last 2 to 3 weeks and what should happen next. Four-star General Jack King.
Yeah, well, in 2 or 3 weeks, the president is citing there. It's not something he picked out of the air. This is the estimate he's getting from the commander of Central Command, who controls all U.S. forces, Admiral Bradley Cooper, and also from Prime Minister Netanyahu and his chief of defense, General Zamir. So that's based on what it's going to take to achieve all the assigned objectives. And obviously, they're comprehensive. And clearly, the focus is appropriate. You know, how a war ends is much more important than how it starts. And coming to an end, what we really want to do is measure success. And quite frankly, the tasks assigned have been comprehensible, but every one of them has been achievable. And they, quite frankly, are number one, take away their offensive capability to use drones, ballistic missiles, their Navy, their Air Force, even their defensive capability in terms of air defense. We are well on our way to accomplishing that goal. And in the next time frame, we'll finish it.
And that means that if we're well on the way, is that a precursor of what we might hear from Trump tonight? There's several things in play. One, we have decimated the Iranian arsenal. Do they still have some missiles? Yes. Do they still have fervent troops that are willing to go for jihad? Yes. But if you have crippled to them to the extent that they cannot really move forward, that was one of the goals we wanted to have. In addition, to make sure they could not use nuclear weapons. And we continue to hit those facilities as well. Now we're hitting a lot of their infrastructure. But what about the future, General King?
The second thing certainly has to do with future capability. That's why we focus on all of the companies that build the weapons to operate offensively or defensively. And that has been a very comprehensive, detailed targeting plan. And also, in the last several days, both forces, the combined force of Israel and the United States, have been focusing very heavily on the industrial civilian capability of the country, for example, steel mills, other manufacturing centers, and the like. Clearly, to have an economic impact on this country for sure in terms of its posture going forward. The third thing, and you talked about it, we want to eliminate whatever is left of this nuclear program. And we know for a fact there are some enriched uranium. How we do that is a presidential decision, whether we go take it or whether we destroy it and create more rubble out of it, which it is likely in that condition now.
And that is exactly what I want to see us to continue to do if we're going to continue to pound Iran. You hit those nuclear sites over and over and over again. No boots on the ground inside Iran for any invasion. If it's in and out for a select mission, that might work. We can expect that possibly on the Karg Island and along the Iranian coastline, if necessary. We've got 5,000 Marines in theater. 82nd Airborne is ready. But we don't need to put boots on those grounds on the Karg Island and the other islands and the coastline. Fine. But you want to accomplish a mission. That's for sure. Former UN ambassador from 2005 to 2006, John Bolton, and of course also served as national security advisor for Trump from 2018 to 2019 until Trump cut him loose, thinking that Bolton is just too much of a hawk. We want to see more peace in the world. What does John Bolton predict will come from President Trump tonight and moving forward?
I think he's going to announce that the victory has been achieved, the war is over, and Americans are coming out. I think he's not doing this on anything related to strategic concerns. He's worried about the price of gasoline at the pump in this country and the political ramifications. We have done a lot of damage to Iran. That's all to the good. It has destabilized the regime. Even Marco Rubio said that yesterday. The conditions are moving in the direction of possible regime change. Apparently, we're going to abandon that as an objective, if it ever was an objective. And I think it's going to leave Iran, unfortunately, although badly wounded, in a stronger position. They have shown they can close the Strait of Hormuz. They're cooperating with Russia much more closely than before. Russia's providing them intelligence to target American facilities and personnel. And I think the Chinese will be more than happy to invest in Iranian oil infrastructure if we walk away from this.
And that might well be happening. It might well be happening. But I take you back to what I read for you earlier from the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu declaring Iran no longer poses an existential threat to Israel following this joint U.S.-Israeli operation crippling Tehran's nuclear and missile capabilities. There is another casualty of this war that's right in our face. The NATO alliances. Trump has already called them out. Secretary of State Rubio.
I've been one of the strongest defenders of NATO during my time as a United States Senator because I found great value in it. But when we need their help, not their help, we're not asking them to conduct airstrikes. When we need them to allow us to use their military bases, their answer is no. But I do think, unfortunately, we are going to have to reexamine whether or not this alliance that has served this country well for a while is still serving that purpose, or is it now become a one-way street where America is simply in a position to defend Europe?
Is that where this is headed, Dan? The United States leaving NATO? And if so, what about NATO, if anything, survives?
Look, I hope that's not the case, and we need to stop airing our differences publicly. That only helps our adversaries like Russia, which we're trying to deter Russia. I think what we need is a NATO summit behind the scenes. We need to discuss some of these tensions. Look, the NATO members will argue the United States didn't consult them before our attacks on Iran. And we will argue that NATO members were slow to come to our assistance when asked to do some things to help us in the war, to prosecute this war against Iran. So, look, both sides have issues we need to discuss, but best to do it privately. Let's leave the hyperbole out of this about leaving NATO. I don't think that's in the offing. And, of course, Congress would be very much against that. And they passed the law that makes it clear that we won't without their approval. It's a congressional treaty. So, look, hopefully we'll have a summit and solve some of these outstanding differences.
That's the voice of Dan Hoffman, former CIA station chief. Now, simply declaring publicly that we might consider leaving NATO, that's not giving away anything, and it's making it very clear to the American public, what are we getting from our allies when we need them the most? Trump had just said yesterday, not a single member heeded his call for aid in securing the Middle East. And one of those being the UK, UK Prime Minister Keith Starmer.
Firstly, NATO is the single most effective military alliance the world has ever seen. And it has kept us safe for many decades, and we are fully committed to NATO. Secondly, that whatever the pressure on me and others, whatever the noise, I'm going to act in the British national interest in all the decisions that I make. And that's why I've been absolutely clear that this is not our war, and we're not going to get dragged into it. Time, but now we move to the next stage with the Foreign Secretary meeting. It is increasingly clear that as the world continues down this volatile path, our long-term national interest requires closer partnership with our allies in Europe with the European Union.
In Europe.
Now we have made progress on this front, on agriculture, electricity, emissions trading, and more. Support. We need to make sure that nobody is left behind here. It's in our interest to have a strong relationship with the US and with Europe. But I do think that when it comes to defence and security, energy, emissions and the economy, we need a stronger relationship with Europe. I actually think that will help strengthen our relationship with the US.
I hear him propping up Europe more than saying we also want to work with the U.S. He threw the U.S. in as almost an addendum. Who do you think's been there for you, Starmer, in the U.K. and the European Union? But again, back to John Bolton, who basically is trying to trash talk Trump and yet stopping just short of it.
What you have now are certainly new faces, but the same ideology. And if this wounded animal gets back in power in Tehran, they will go back to doing exactly what their predecessors were doing, rebuilding the nuclear weapons program, rebuilding the ballistic missile program, rebuilding the terrorist network, and now practicing how to close the Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz to maritime traffic. This is worse than having sat back and done nothing.
Is the regime near falling?
Well, I don't think we know enough to know. I do think Marco Rubio said yesterday that there were fractures at the top that said that their own negotiators, we could not determine whether they spoke for anybody but themselves. And that's what you would expect to happen after 4 weeks of pounding on the Revolutionary Guard. I believe that if we were to continue, that the destabilizing effect of our attacks would continue to cause the regime to fragment at the top and then collapse on itself. Let me just say one thing about what this outcome means. The Russians, as we know, have been supplying intelligence to Iran about our positions, our bases, our ships, our personnel. I think that Russia and China now will invest far more heavily in Ukraine, and sorry, Freudian slip, in Iran. The Russians have always wanted a strong position in the Middle East. They've lost Syria when the Assad regime fell. Now they have a country, potentially 92 million people, where they can use for their purposes all across the Middle East, and maybe even finally get that warm water port in the south of Iran that they've always wanted.
Yeah, Russia will probably take advantage of that opportunity. And he is right about that. Russia and China will be looking to see what inroads they can make with Iran. But his attitude that we might as well not have gone if this is what we're going to do, I'm not sure I buy that. And I go back to the statement of the Israeli prime minister. They are in the ring of fire, right at the center of it. And when Netanyahu declares Iran no longer poses an existential threat to Israel, he's talking about nuclear annihilation. And, of course, all the other missiles and rockets they've been firing and drones. We have decimated that. President Trump will be addressing the nation right after we finish our second hour tonight. Still to come in our next segment, John Daniel Davidson of The Federalist and his view of what Trump might be saying tonight and what he proposed just yesterday for the U.S. to do. And on this date, April 1, 1945, the U.S. invaded Okinawa. The bloody war of the Pacific. Lock and load, ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Another day, must be another roofer in town. John Beal and I were talking. He said, you know, every time you turn around, there's a new roofing company. Many of them have no idea what they're doing, and the statistics show that many will be out of business within 2 to 5 years. Who are you going to call to help you then? You need to remember only one name, John Beal. John Beal Roofing. You have a problem, he can take care of it. And we'll be here for you. John Beal Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. You should know that when I endorse Wellington Environmental, it's because I believe and know they will do you right. Wellington takes pride in providing homeowners and businesses whatever they need. You need some dustless blasting? They will take care of that. You need some mold radiation? They can do that. They take pride in training their team to perform multiple services and having the equipment ready to get jobs finished. That's important to you. You make just one call, and you call a company that's been around for more than 35 years with more than 45 technicians in the field. Most of you know finding good workers, then having them show up on time could be difficult. Not for Wellington Environmental. They're there at the designated time, ready to go. Check them out to see what they could do for you. Dustless blasting or anything else you need. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Finally, March, the season of fresh starts, more daylight, more energy. A perfect time to take a fresh look at your home. Your windows or doors are outdated and efficient? Check with Renewal by Anderson. From your first design consultation through final installation, every detail is handled by one experienced, dedicated team. Clear communication, precise craftsmanship. Renewal by Anderson windows built with our exclusive Fibrex material, stronger than vinyl. And right now, during our March savings event, take $400 off every window, $800 off every door, and get a free upgrade to Smart Sun Glass. No money down, no payments, no interest for 12 months. But this ends March 31st. Call 877-WINDOWS, 877-WINDOWS, or visit rbastl.com. rbastl.com. Superior products, exceptional service. It's that time of season when families, businesses are moving. For local or long distance, I endorse McGuire Moving. Get a date set soon before the schedules are booked. 314-241-0600. 241-0600. McGuire is constantly giving back to our veterans, such as support dogs for our brave. So with McGuire, you're getting excellent service and helping our vets. McGuireMoving.com.
This is News Talk STL.
Change, change, change. 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 Change, change, change.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. My guest we've had on numerous times before, always insightful, senior editor of The Federalist, also author of the book Pagan America, The Decline of Christianity. I strongly suggest you pull that up. Pagan America, written by John Daniel Davidson. John, welcome aboard again. Hello, John. All right, we're going to try to reestablish. We had him and then we lost him. We'll get him back on him. Sorry, folks, this happens from time to time. You just have to bear with it, and you think I'm going to be caught off guard? Listen, I'm a Texan, and I have a BS degree in political science, and I use the BS part a lot, so I'm never going to be caught where I can't do a little tap dance if necessary. But obviously, I want you to hear from John Daniel Davidson with The Federalist. John, welcome aboard, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me.
John, you wrote, first of all, let me put it this way. The president's going to speak tonight, as you well know, and I would ask you what you think he's going to say. And based on an article you wrote yesterday, you wrote and questioned, should Trump just declare victory in Iran and end the war? Go ahead.
Well, it's impossible to predict what the president is going to say because he is just as likely to announce a massive ground invasion of U.S. Marines and soldiers as he is to say, we've won the war and it's over and we're pulling out. The administration's war aims and objectives have shifted and changed and been so wildly inconsistent over the past month that it's hard to say what our war aims are anymore. To give you one example, yesterday, the White House said in a press conference that opening the Strait of Hormuz is not a core objective of the war. Today, the president said we won't accept a ceasefire unless the Strait of Hormuz is opened. So is it a core objective or not? It's like, what is going on?
And
who can say what the president will say? So none of it makes any sense.
All right. So maybe it doesn't make sense to the Americans. We don't know what's going on, nor should we be told explicitly. But it also could serve as a throwing the opposition off balance, right or no? John?
Hello?
Yeah. So he could be saying, oh, it's just to keep Iran off balance. Yes or no? Oh, geez, I tell you, I'm convinced that George Soros and his millions, billions, are interfering with our operation from time to time, getting his leftist policies out one way or the other, and that is by shutting down some of what we're doing with Larry Connors USA. So we'll go back to John and try to pick up that part of it. And he is correct. We've heard different things from Trump. But again, is that just to the American public, leaving some confusion, but also Iran? John, I'm sorry we had the difficulty. I'm blaming George Soros, by the way. So some of this differing opinions and statements, is it just to also throw the enemy off guard?
No, I don't think so. We get conflicting messages from inside the administration. The Secretary of State will say one thing. The Secretary of War will say another thing. The White House press secretary will say yet something else. And then the president will blow it all up and say something that none of those people said. And this has been going on for weeks now. We were told at the beginning that, you know, the part of this war was to help the Iranian people rise up and overthrow their government. And then immediately that was shunted aside. And then we were told that we have to secure Iran's nuclear materials. Well, now yesterday Trump said he doesn't care about the nuclear materials.
Well, so I'm not so sure he said he didn't care. He just said that they're no longer going to be viable. You don't agree with that?
Well, I have no idea whether or not they're viable. Clearly, he's trying to downgrade the importance of recovering the nuclear materials because he knows he can't. That he will lose public support by launching some sort of a harebrained mission to go deep into the interior of Iran to a location that they probably don't even know where it is because Iran has moved it or hidden it under a mountain and try to recover, you know, highly volatile, hundreds of pounds of highly volatile enriched uranium. And so, of course, he's going to downgrade the importance of that. But that is not my point is that's not what he said. And that's not what the administration was saying at the outset of this war.
Well, dealing with the point you raised, I agree. I do not want U.S. boots on the ground in Iran in an invasion force. And I say for select missions only. And I don't think going after the uranium particles or whatever is left is a good idea. And the Ipsos poll, as you point out, shows 55% of Americans would not support it. Only 7% would be willing to go for a large-scale invasion of the country. I say no.
Yeah, I mean, it's deeply unpopular. If he even orders troops to take some of these islands in the Strait of Hormuz or to storm Karg Island, which is where Iran's oil refineries and their shipping depot is, even that is going to be so deeply unpopular, it's going to sink his presidency. And it risks embroiling us in a deep kind of Vietnam-like quagmire, because if those troops come under fire and significant numbers of them are killed, well, now we have to go all in. We're going to have to be fighting a war with Iran for years or however long it takes to win. And I hope that he doesn't make that mistake. But who knows? But again, who knows what he'll do?
All right. Now, and I'm willing to accept, again, limited action against Karg Island and shutting that and some of the other islands and maybe coastal points with the Marines and 82nd Airborne. But I still don't want boots on the ground in Iran, even on the outlying islands. But I can see where that could happen. But let me put what you were saying against the statement of Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu yesterday, Iran no longer poses an existential threat to Israel. He's talking specifically about nuclear weapons.
Well, to be frank, I don't really care what Netanyahu says. And I don't really care what the Israeli government says. I think that Netanyahu and the Israelis, you know, chain ganged us into this war and persuaded Trump to launch a war that they wanted to wage. And we knew that they were going to try to do this ever since last June after Operation Midnight Hammer. We knew that the Israelis wanted to keep going. They didn't want the 12-day war to end after 12 days. And so they finally were able to get their war. And I think they got it by persuading Trump that a sort of shock and awe aerial bombardment of Iran would cause the regime to topple within a few days, and that Iran was much weaker than it turns out to have been. And those things were just not true. And so now we're in this situation where we don't really know what our objectives are. We don't really know how to win. If we accept a ceasefire from Iran in exchange for opening the Strait of Hormuz, then we've lost the war. Even if Trump says we've won, we've lost. And that's the horrible situation this administration has led us into.
Well, the other fracture that has happened, and I don't fully agree with what you're saying about Netanyahu, but it's a difference of opinion. But another casualty of the war at this point appears to be NATO and our alliances with NATO.
Yeah, they've been exposed as kind of fake because we're there to kind of fund NATO. But then when we need to use NATO bases, we can't. And so what's the point? And, I've long thought NATO is kind of a relic of the Cold War, and that after the Cold War, NATO had to kind of change its purpose and mission to retain relevance. And there was a bit of bureaucratic inertia behind that. But it's hard to say, you know, what NATO's role is in the face of the real world events. And so, but you know, to me, that's sort of a side issue, because a much larger issue is the fact that this war has exposed our Middle East bases and the countries that host our military bases. We can't protect those countries. We can't protect our bases. We've had major losses of aircraft and other expensive radar equipment at these bases, and then their refining capabilities have been totally open to Iranian missile and drone attacks.
All right, but if we had not taken the attacks we did against them, we would be more at their suffering.
No, I'm saying countries like Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia that have allowed us to station our troops for decades on their territory, with the understanding that we would protect them if we got into a Middle East war in exchange for allowing us to base our troops there. That's proven to be a lie, because we haven't been able to protect them. We didn't protect them.
All right.
They've been hit repeatedly by Iran. And so what do you think those countries are going to do moving forward? Are they going to allow us to keep our troops there, you know, go after this war? That's a big question.
Good question. And then last 30 seconds, your summation of your piece yesterday for Trump to simply declare victory and move on. You say it might be as good as Trump is going to get.
That's right, because he doesn't have any good options right now. And declaring victory and getting out isn't a great option. And it might not work, because Iran might just keep launching missiles and drones at other Middle Eastern countries and at our bases. But I think we have to consider some kind of option like that compared to the alternative, which is a decades-long Afghanistan misadventure or a quagmire like Vietnam.
All right.
And I think we just have to be realistic about that.
John Daniel Davidson, senior editor of The Federalist. Again, I appreciate your time and your thoughts, sir.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Sorry for the interruptions we had. I appreciate it. John Daniel Davidson. Check him out at The Federalist and his book, Pagan America. I strongly suggest that. And, of course, coming up, the story behind the story, as we moved on to Okinawa, this date, 1945.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
I want to share something with you. Cooking a pizza using coal creates an amazing pizza. Only one place to get it: Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in Chesterfield. Of course, they offer a wide variety of pasta, but you just visit the website NapoliSTL.com, dine in or take out, and get ready for patio season. Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in Chesterfield Valley. Try it. You can thank me later.
Thank you.
So many times, Vincent's Jewelers has helped me surprise someone special. Vincent's locally owned can do the same for you, and you don't have to break the bank to get something really nice, maybe even customized. The smile you're going to get back from that special someone, priceless. Check Vincent'sJewelers.com every day because new items are arriving and there are special deals. Vincent's, my only jeweler. Vincent'sJewelers.com. Vincent'sJewelers.com. Finally, March, the season of fresh starts, more daylight, more energy. A perfect time to take a fresh look at your home. Your windows or doors are outdated and efficient? Check with Renewal by Anderson. From your first design consultation through final installation, every detail is handled by one experienced, dedicated team. Clear communication, precise craftsmanship. Renewal by Anderson windows built with our exclusive Fibrex material, stronger than vinyl. And right now, during our March savings event, take $400 off every window, $800 off every door, and get a free upgrade to Smart Sun Glass. No money down, no payments, no interest for 12 months. But this ends March 31st. Call 877-WINDOWS, 877-WINDOWS, or visit rbastl.com. rbastl.com. Superior products, exceptional service. When insurance companies know you're represented by Under Law, they know Under is not going to let you be pushed around. Their reputation is built on years of courtroom battles. If you suffer an injury or damage to your property, serve the insurance company notice. You have Under Law on your side, a St. Louis firm you can trust to protect you at every term. Don't settle for less. You want to win? Believe me, Under wins. Under, O-N-D-E-R, underlaw.com.
This is News Talk STL.
Boom, 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 boom. Shoot your right down. Take you.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA. Now, Larry Connors with the story behind the story.
At 8:30 a.m., the first American soldiers set foot on the beach. But as the soldiers are expecting to meet the fire of Japanese defense, the surroundings are unusually quiet.
When the Americans landed, there were hardly any Japanese soldiers. They faced no resistance. When the soldiers arrived on April 1st, it almost felt like they were going on a picnic.
In. It was really quiet. Soldiers and Marines alike were like, wow, this is relatively easy. There's no resistance there along the beach.
You literally see soldiers marching inland, standing upright. And the Americans are getting lodged on the island, and they're like, what is the Japanese general doing? And the answer is, I don't know, but we'll take advantage of it.
Yeah, that was the beginning of the battle for Okinawa following the battle for Iwo Jima. But on April 1st, 1945, this date, 1945, the largest amphibious Okinawa, surrounding Okinawa, as part of the World War II Pacific Theater battle. 82-day battle on Okinawa from April 1st through June 22nd, 1945. All of this was part of the campaign of island hopping to get closer to Japan. And Okinawa put them about 340 miles away where we could easily reach them with our bombers at that point. The battle's also been referred to as the Typhoon of Steel. So what were the Japanese doing? What changed? Because we were used to encountering them on the beach and been trying to fight and slug our way away from the beach. And in this case, our troops literally were walking out of their amphibious landing craft soldiers, military, army, and Marines, and then walking up the hill with little, if any, resistance. What was going on? Well, that was, as we pointed out, just the beginning to the open to the Okinawa battle.
The bloodiest and cruelest campaign of World War II rages on a small island the size of Los Angeles, the Battle of Okinawa. As war winds down in Europe, here on this little piece of land in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, the United States and Japan face off in an agonizing conflict that will change the course of history.
Gruesome, high casualties. This is really a slugfest, more of a World War I type of battle.
On the American side, 180,000 soldiers, an armada of battleships, and thousands of fighter aircraft. On the other, 120,000 desperate Japanese ready to die for their country.
You had to be willing to sacrifice your life for the emperor. That meant you were a good Japanese citizen.
You were good Japanese if you're willing to sacrifice your life. And when it came to Okinawa and what else was happening in the Pacific, it was not just the soldiers. It was the villagers and the island people that lived in those provinces. And that included the children. The move on Okinawa continues.
The 10th American Army is tasked with invading Okinawa. A force of 180,000 men under the command of three-star general Simon Bolivar Buckner. Facing them, Japan has had time to prepare its defense. 80,000 soldiers of the 32nd Japanese Army, led by General Ushijima Mitsuru, are stationed on the island. The population is also enlisted, as 40,000 civilians will fight alongside the soldiers.
Japanese troops come over and they mobilize the entire island. And I mean, every man, woman, and child is supposed to build fortifications and airstrips, and all their farming is supposed to feed the troops, and they're supposed to be prepared to fight and enlist to fight.
The Japanese general staff already knew that their army would be decimated in Okinawa. The main mission of the troops was to buy some time. No matter the cost, they had to delay the battle that would soon occur on Japan's main island, even just by one day. The army and the emperor himself were aware that the island of Okinawa would eventually be occupied by the American troops, but they needed more time to get ready before fighting the Americans on their own turf.
So this was technically using those members of their military and the island people, and including children, young children, were mobilized, one, to build structures to help protect, but also to go direct into battle. But they were just trying to buy time. They were basically, as you've often heard, referred to cannon fodder. They were expendable. And they knew they were going to be losing the island. And, of course, the kamikaze attacks started again. They were, for the first time, a major aspect of the Japanese defensive strategy. Between the U.S. landing on April 1 and May 25, seven major kamikaze attacks were attempted involving more than 1,500 planes. But again, the action continued because it had to.
East China Sea, 5:30 a.m. On this particular Easter Sunday, 1,300 American and British warships, including 12 aircraft carriers and 7 battleships, are sailing towards the island of Okinawa. A super powerful air-sea task force is ready to unleash countless bombs on the island in order to land and take it from the Japanese. The code name for this mission is Operation Iceberg. It is the largest assault of the entire Pacific campaign. Since the surprise attack on Pearl Harbor by Japanese planes in December 1941, the American Army has set out to conquer the territories of the Japanese Empire. This includes the Marshall Islands, the Solomon Islands, Saipan, and the Philippines. It's been one battle after another throughout World War II. For the American command, landing on the main Japanese island is the last step of this relentless conquest. After the Battle of Iwo Jima, the last islands remaining to be seized are in the Okinawa Archipelago, located a mere 700 kilometers south of the Japanese coast.
And the total aircraft involved at this point by the U.S. Navy, Marine, and Army Air Force, 3,000 aircraft over the course of the battle. That included fighters, attack planes, scout planes, bombers, dive bombers, and it was supported by a fleet of 18 battleships, 27 cruisers, 177 destroyers and escorts, 39 aircraft carriers, 11 fleet carriers, 6 light carriers, 22 escort carriers, and other support and troop transport ships. The British naval group consisted of something like 250 British naval aircraft and a British Commonwealth fleet, along with Australia, New Zealand, and Canadian ships and personnel. It was, as I said, called the Typhoon of Steel Battle. And you heard in that report the mention of Iwo Jima. We're talking about April 1, 1945, when we began the invasion of Okinawa, but it was 2 months earlier that we were going into Iwo Jima, and that was one of the deadliest battles, the deadliest battle for U.S. Marines in history. So there is more to the story behind the story.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Do you know why I endorse Cafe Napoli? All the locations? Visit any of them and you will quickly appreciate the quality of food, service, atmosphere. So maybe I'll see you at Cafe Napoli in Clayton, Napoli Kirkwood, Napoli 2 in Town & Country, Napoli 3 in St. Charles, right next door to Napoli C. Or maybe you'll find me at Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in the Chesterfield Valley. Now you know why I endorse Napoli. NapoliSTL.com.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Now, the end of the story behind the story.
As the United States pushed forward in its Pacific campaign, it launched a brutal amphibious assault on the island of Iwo Jima. What followed was one of the bloodiest battles in the United States Marine Corps' history. A grueling, hellish fight where every inch of black volcanic sand was paid for in blood. Though the Americans ultimately claimed victory, it came at a staggering cost. The battle stood as a grim testament to the unyielding resistance of Japanese forces who fought with relentless ferocity, willing to die rather than surrender. Initially, under the Joint Chiefs of Staff directive, Admiral Chester Nimitz had planned to invade Formosa as part of the Pacific strategy. However, after receiving recommendations from his senior admirals, Nimitz revised his approach and proposed capturing Iwo Jima and Okinawa instead. The Joint Chiefs of Staff approved his plan, and in October 1944, Nimitz began preparing for the invasion of Iwo Jima, later designated Operation Detachment. In May 1944, Japanese Prime Minister Tojo Hideki assigned Lieutenant General Tadamichi Kurabayashi, a seasoned and highly respected officer, to lead the defense of Iwo Jima. Though he understood that victory was impossible, Kurabayashi was determined to make the American invasion as costly as possible. He immediately ordered the construction of an extensive tunnel network beneath the island, designed to shield his forces from the relentless US bombardment while allowing them to move undetected and launch surprise counterattacks. Above ground, his troops built hundreds of pillboxes, blockhouses, and gun emplacements, many so well fortified that only direct hits from naval gunfire could destroy them. However, rather than heavily defending the beaches, where most prior island battles had been decided, Kurabayashi devised a different strategy. He positioned his soldiers deep in caves and tunnels, waiting until US forces advanced inland before unleashing a devastating, coordinated infantry and artillery assault. In a stark break from traditional Japanese military doctrine, he strictly forbade the often suicidal banzai charges. Instead, he ordered each one of his men to kill at least 10 Americans from concealed positions before dying in combat.
There were something like 70,000 U.S. Marines and 18,000 Japanese soldiers in that battle, 36 days of fighting. Nearly 7,000 U.S. Marines killed, 7,000, 20,000 others wounded, some dying of their injuries later. Marines captured 216 Japanese soldiers, the rest killed in action. And again, they were trying to deal with those hiding in the holes that had been dug and also to get to the top of Mount Suribachi.
U.S. Marines finally secured Mount Suribachi. In a moment that would become one of the most iconic in military history, Marines raised the American flag atop the summit, not once, but twice. The second flag raising was captured by Associated Press photographer Joe Rosenthal, whose image became one of the most famous combat photos of World War II, later earning him the Pulitzer Prize. The image symbolized the determination and sacrifice of U.S. forces in the Pacific campaign and remains an enduring representation of American military valor. As the battle raged on, the 23rd, 25th, and 27th Marine regiments found themselves measuring progress in yards rather than miles. Facing relentless Japanese resistance, despite the grueling combat, the 23rd Regiment succeeded in capturing Motoyama Airfield No. 1 by February the 24th, and Motoyama Airfield No. 2 by February the 27th. However, pushing beyond these positions became increasingly difficult. Operation Detachment was one of the bloodiest battles in the United States Marine Corps' history. By the time the fighting ended, nearly 18,500 Japanese soldiers had been killed, with only a handful taken prisoner. The American toll was staggering. Approximately 6,800 U.S. Marines lost their lives, and another 19,200 were wounded in the brutal, month-long struggle for the island. In recognition of the extraordinary bravery and sacrifice displayed during the battle, 27 Medal of Honors, the highest military decoration awarded by the United States, were presented to Marines and Navy personnel, making it the most Medal of Honor recipients for a single battle in the history of the United States.
And it came at a high price. You heard him mention there were actually two American flags raised on top of Mount Suribachi. One was done, and then later the photographer Joe Rosenthal got there for the second flag raising, and it was done again. And the Marines who had raised the first one were not present, not all of them, to take part in the second raising of the flag. But that was a key point for the troops, because down below Mount Suribachi, a 546-foot dormant volcano, they could see the flag, and it gave them new enthusiasm. And those that stepped forward to take part in that flag raising, four of them later would be killed shortly after that. The war in the Pacific. The battle in Europe was over, basically. But the war in the Pacific was far from over. It would take an atomic bomb to put an end to it and to avoid sending more U.S. troops into harm's way. But, of course, hundreds of thousands of innocent civilians in Japan paid with the price as well. Our story behind the story tomorrow, the Pony Express and connection to Missouri. That'll be coming up. And reminding you, after we finish our second hour tonight, President Trump and his address to the nation. Stick around for that as well. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
John Beal Roofing reminds you we are in the stormy season, and that means if you have even the smallest leak in your roof, you could soon have a much bigger issue. Call John Beal to make sure that your biggest investment is protected. That call can save you major dollars. If you do get hit during a storm, John Beal has a rapid response team. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 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 John Beal. There's only one place you can get pizza cooked over coals, Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in Chesterfield Valley. Of course, Napoli Brothers has a great selection of pasta dishes. Between the pizza and pasta, trust me, you will not leave hungry. Then, a few doors down, Lit Cigar Lounge, a wide variety of quality cigars, each offering a unique smoke. That cigar, some premium whiskey, all you need to do is enjoy. Lit Cigar Lounge and Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta, Chesterfield Valley. It's that time of season when families, businesses are moving. For local or long distance, I endorse McGuire Moving. Get a date set soon before the schedules are booked. 314-241-0600. 241-0600. McGuire is constantly giving back to our veterans, such as support dogs for our brave. So with McGuire, you're getting excellent service and helping our vets. McGuireMoving.com. So many times, Vincent's Jewelers has helped me surprise someone special. Vincent's locally owned can do the same for you, and you don't have to break the bank to get something really nice, maybe even customized. The smile you're going to get back from that special someone, priceless. Check Vincent'sJewelers.com every day because new items are arriving and there are special deals. Vincent's, my only jeweler. Vincent'sJewelers.com. Vincent'sJewelers.com. Finally, March, the season of fresh starts, more daylight, more energy. A perfect time to take a fresh look at your home. Your windows or doors are outdated and efficient? Check with Renewal by Anderson. From your first design consultation through final installation, every detail is handled by one experienced, dedicated team. Clear communication, precise craftsmanship. Renewal by Anderson windows built with our exclusive Fibrex material, stronger than vinyl. And right now, during our March savings event, take $400 off every window, $800 off every door, and get a free upgrade to Smart Sun Glass. No money down, no payments, no interest for 12 months. But this ends March 31st. Call 877-WINDOWS, 877-WINDOWS, or visit rbastl.com. rbastl.com. Superior products, exceptional service. Let's be candid, honest. No out-of-state law firm can represent you better than Under Law. O-N-D-E-R. Hometown roots, attorneys living right here with you and your family. When you suffer an injury because someone else was negligent, Under Law will make sure the other party takes full responsibility. You'll get full compensation, not a backroom deal worked out with some insurance companies. And of course, we're moving into the stormy season. And again, when you have a legitimate claim, you should be properly compensated. Under Law does not toy around with adjusters, investigators, lawyers trained to cheat you of what is rightfully yours. Under Law has already recovered millions for families across Missouri and Illinois. Under wins. Not just a catchy phrase, it's a fact. So I'll repeat it. Under wins. Underlaw.com. O-N-D-E-R. Underlaw.com. Wins.
This is News Talk STL.